the bump and run, the Bristol move.
That's aggressive, but it's that's good. Good heart racing.
Oh!
He puts him out of the groove there.
Oh, man!
Will he get the bumper? Yes, he does. Here comes Logano. Logano on the inside. A drag race. They're sideways. And it's going to be Logano getting the win.
The back end of the 18 kick out.
Yeah, he got into it right there.
Moved him out of the way.
It's almost too early to be racing that hard for the lead, wasn't it?
Never too early to be racing for the lead.
At Bristol.
At Bristol.
Man, this is one of the biggest wins of my career.
It's the bump and run,
baby.
Here we go.
Welcome to the Bump and Run podcast. I'm your host, Michael D. White, joined by one of my best friends, Matt the Statman Riley, Eric Daytona Ron. Unfortunately, couldn't make it this week. He has some family matters to attend to, but we will catch up with him after Atlanta next week. But we got a Phoenix race to talk about. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Hope you had yourselves a Slick Willie 2 Clocks weekend. Going back to back. West Coast Willie getting it done in Phoenix a week after he got it done in Las Vegas, double locked himself into the playoffs. Hopefully he gets to retain all of his playoff points, though. We'll get to that in a few. But make sure you like, share, subscribe, do all that stuff. Podcast available usually every Monday night, every Tuesday morning on YouTube, Monday night, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, all that stuff. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe and hit the bell and all those things. Follow us on Twitter at Bump and Run Pod. Matt, how's your weekend, brother?
What's up? It was all right. It was okay. So, I presently sit here in front of you at this current moment, it is Tuesday night, March 14th at 7:25. You are looking at a prisoner of war.
Oh yeah.
I am a hostage right now to one individual, one Aaron Rodgers. So I am obviously a Jet fan. I'm wearing my Jet hoodie in hopes that the guy finally signs with the Jets. He's had us in a holding pattern for a week, not announcing anything. And I know, you know, probably most NASCAR fans listening to this don't give a shit about football and specifically the Jets. But he would be immediately the best quarterback the Jets have ever had. So I'm a nervous wreck over it. And I've been held hostage here. So I'm just waiting for him to announce so I can move on with my life.
You know what you remind me of, and I'll bring it back to NASCAR, was the whole entire summer of 2019, waiting for the announcement that Tyler Reddick was going to move up from the Xfinity Series to Cup, because Cole Custer was already announced and Christopher Bell was already announced. I'm like, they can't leave Tyler Reddick in Xfinity. See you later, Daniel Hemric. Get out of that 8 car. Move on up. So I completely understand constantly checking Twitter every few minutes.
Dude, it's like my thumb is going raw from like constantly jumping on there and like refreshing it and refreshing it and refreshing it. And like my Twitter feed is filled with a bunch of NASCAR, a bunch of Notre Dame, and a bunch of like Jets, like beat writers and Jet fans and Jet podcasters and all the speculations that have been going on. And I'm just like at the point where it's like either shit or get off the pot, buddy. Like, let's go.
So I'm not a football fan, so I'm not aware of like their media personalities and stuff, but I know Bob Pockrass usually breaks news before anybody, or he'll report it after like Adam Stern breaks something or one of those guys. Is there a guy for Jets football like that?
So, well, they have beat writers, but like the NFL guy, like there's pretty much two of them. For ESPN, it's Adam Schefter. And then for the NFL Network, it's Ian Rapoport. And like, they're like the big news breakers. They're the Bob Pockrasses of like the NFL world. And so they're the ones who it's like, you're constantly refreshing. And like NFL free agency started too. So it's like the whole league is like,
everything's going on.
There's updates like literally every minute, someone's going somewhere else. And so it's hard to keep up with, but yeah, so I got that going on. Just, still looking at vehicles. I had a really good experience with GMC. So a follow-up from last week, we talked about it.
Oh, yeah, you're jumping on the Toyota camp.
Had a great experience with GMC. Had an awful experience with one of the local Chevy dealers I won't mention on here. No, I won't do it.
Is it Boner Chevrolet?
No, it is not, actually. No, it's across the river, up by the mall.
Oh, stay away from them completely. Whole entire family of dealerships.
You're like the fifth person who's told me that since I've gone there.
I told you. Do you remember when we were talking about your last Toyota experience? I'm like, oh, I do a lot of radio stuff going up to those dealerships.
Yep.
And they've always been not the nicest. Them and that dealership, their Audi and Porsche dealership. Yeah, awful. Fuck them all. Yep. Fuck
Very
them
bad.
All.
Hey. Very bad. So GMC is the front runner for my free agency update. But so got that going on. Got a bunch of things going on. So how was your weekend, buddy?
Not too bad. One tip though, go to that football guy's Twitter and there's like a little little bell thing
to alerts
just to him. That way you're not constantly refreshing everyone else's and you're like, oh, he tweets something, you put it back in the pocket and you forget about it.
You people should be doing that with the Bump and Run podcast too.
You should. You absolutely should. My weekend was good. I feel like I didn't do much. Worked Friday. Me and Bree, we went to see Tom Papa at the Scranton Cultural Center. He's a stand-up comedian. Pretty funny. Oh, yeah. Funny. Let's see. Saturday. What did we do Saturday? Saturday, we went up to Scranton Business Route 6, Treacherous Business Route 6. And then Sunday, the Phoenix race. It was a super quiet weekend. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of work to do at the radio station on Friday before that stand-up show. And then on Saturday, I had to go up. We had the Scranton St. Patrick's Day parade, so I avoided Scranton at all costs. Usually about 100,000 people show up for that whole ordeal, and I didn't have to work it for once. So
of the area, I think it's like the fourth or fifth largest St. Patrick's Day parade in the country. At least at one point it was. I'm sure it still is. It's a huge, huge deal in our area. If anyone that's relatively close is looking to have a really good time, the Scranton St. Patrick's Day parade is a fantastic time. I haven't gone in a few years just because life has taken me in different directions and just too busy, you know, right now. But back when we were younger in our 20s, it was a blast.
Yeah. I'm more of a Pittston St. Patrick's Day parade fan, but Scranton, it's one of those things. If you're on the East Coast, you live in like New York or New Jersey or something, come on up for the weekend to Scranton for the St. Patrick's Day parade. It's pretty interesting. We had a bunch of I forget what they were. They're like either like Irish deities of some sorts that came in from Ireland and stuff for it. Like it's ridiculous how it's just a big old drink fest.
It's a giant drinking
fest. It's fantastic if you like to drink all day long. I can't do that anymore. I'm in my 30s and Matt's a dad. So
yeah,
I'm a dad
and then I get bad heartburn. So
yeah, I didn't do any of the
places. Just like when Chase is leading with five to go, bad heartburn.
Boy, I had some heartburn for this Phoenix race at the end there. Yeah. Let's jump right into it. Let's get into the NASCAR news first.
The Bump and Run NASCAR news.
Let's see, only a couple of news stories. Kimi Raikkonen will return to the Trackhouse Project 91 car, not this weekend, but next weekend for COTA. What do you think about a former F1 champion and somewhat retired driver coming back? He did Daytona last year. I don't remember, did he do any other races last year?
No, he did Watkins Glen, and I think he didn't make it too far into the race to my knowledge. I know he finished like 37th or something like that. I don't know if it was a wreck or motor issues or he got caught up. I forget, but it was Watkins Glen he ran last year. So, big former F1 driver. You know, I think a lot of people are going to be tuning in to see him hopefully do better than he did last year. So, like we always say, you know, when these big names from other forms of motorsports come in, we just saw Travis Pastrana with the Daytona 500 come in. A lot of eyeballs were on our sport because of that reason. So, more luck to him. He's getting in good equipment. Trackhouse has really, really good equipment. Has good, good equipment everywhere, but good road course cars, it seems like, for, you know, judging off of last year. So hopefully better results for him.
Yeah, he did finish 37th at the Glen last year. I'm trying to see if I could. I think he had some sort of mechanical failure. Like, it wasn't an issue of.
I know if Daytona Ron was on right now, he'd be yelling at us saying, this is the last shot for a ringer to come on and try to prove something in the Cup Series.
He does. He hates road course ringers. He hates hearing about them. Because you want to know what it is? It's like a lot of hype going in. Like, oh, yeah, Boris Sedd's going to run this road course. And then Boris Sedd or Joey Hand finishes like best position 25th on a great day, you know,
right.
and they're a non-factor, but it's fun to talk about before going into it. And
back in the day when like the NASCAR Cup regulars didn't give a shit about road courses, didn't take it seriously, but except for maybe a handful of them, you know, yeah, you had these ringers come in and do really good and even win races. But now, you know, it seems like everyone's bought into the road course thing. I mean, you better be, because we have what, 6 or 7 of them on our schedule every year. So it's not just, you know, one at Sonoma, one at Watkins Glen anymore. We've got a handful of important races at road courses. So everyone's taking it more seriously. Everyone's gotten better at road course racing. So these ringers coming in don't really do much.
No, especially when they're jumping in a car for the first time or like the first time in a season, limited practice and stuff. Like, they're professional drivers. I mean, Kimi Raikkonen's an F1 champion, for God's sakes. He's a fantastic driver. But at the same time, like, it's really tough to jump into a car you've never really driven before and perform well against guys who are doing it day in and day out, not only in the simulator, but every week at the track. And like you said, like, it's not like back in the day where you had a handful of guys that were really good at road courses and that was it. Like, I feel like everyone in the field is really good at road courses these days. And now you have to be next level to beat those guys out. You know, like AJ Allmendinger used to be the road course ringer that everyone talked about. And now, like, he's just like, everyone's just as good as he is, I feel like, you know. Although he does put himself up front at these road courses a lot more than he does in the ovals. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited for Coda. I'm excited for Coda to see how those Toyotas do and Tyler Reddick does.
Coda put on a good show last year. And the first year we were there, we had that monsoon come through, but it was still entertaining. It was sloppy, but it was still entertaining. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Coda. That's in 2 weeks, right?
Yep. After Atlanta, we head back to Texas for Coda. I feel like you should leave Coda on like the West Coast swing kind. I guess it's the South, but you're in like that whole general area. Why not add it in?
I hate the West Coast swing. I always have. I have never been a big fan of it. I don't know. That's just me. I know it doesn't matter because it's over now, but I've never been a fan of the West Coast swing.
I kind of agree. I like all the tracks on there except for Phoenix. My problem with it is it's so early in the season and you're sending out those cars that have already been prepared, where you can't really get a good gauge of who's going to be good, because you could be really good like William Byron and Kyle Larson at the West Coast swing. And then you come back to the shot and then like everyone else just outruns you because
it's time to catch up. Yeah. Now they have, you know, they have a week to get back. Everyone's back in the shop. You have a week. You don't have to get out on a whatever Wednesday when they're launching back to the West Coast. So yeah, you got a little bit more time. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't have a problem with the West Coast itself. Just I wish it was a little deeper into the season.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, because you want to be able to gauge these guys right off the bat. For us at least, because we gamble and we do fantasy and stuff. But speaking of road courses, NASCAR's decided to implement the choose cone at all races going forward. Originally this season, it was just added for super speedways and dirt, but now they've added it to road courses. I was listening to Door Bumper Clear today. They don't understand why. They seem like it's kind of pointless to have the choose cone. What do you think about it?
Well, I'll be honest with you, with with the Aaron Rodgers news and everything else that's going on in my personal life, you just broke that news to me. I didn't even see it when I was reading the rundown. I must have skipped past that piece of news. So you just broke that news to me. I didn't know that. What was their reasoning behind not understanding it? I mean, I feel like any little even if it's a little advantage, picking the lane, you know, some tracks it's better to be on in that left lanes, you know, like a Watkins Glen, it's better to be on in that right lane, because when you come down into that 90 degree turn one, if you're washing up the track, you're the one doing the washing. You're not getting washed into. Just little things like that. I feel like it's a big advantage. So, maybe I'm wrong, but so, I don't.
So their whole reasoning was, they're going to drive into turn one the way it is anyways. Like, they're going to dive bomb the turn, and then turn two at pretty much every single road course is the exact opposite turn. So then that outside line now becomes the inside line, and they gain momentum where it's like, it doesn't really, really matter. I personally like it though, just as consistency across the board, you know?
So consistency and, what is it? It doesn't hurt anything. So why not? We're not adding, like, they have to do that caution lap anyway. So why not? We're not adding any more time or anything to it. Who cares? I think that's my biggest thing, is like, who cares? Like,
yeah,
consistency is the biggest thing, I guess, would be, you know, I'm for it.
Yeah. I agree with that. It's like, what does it matter if they do it? And now at least you have the same rule at every track is the way I see it. So I'm all for it, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, those guys are thinking in a different way too. They're not thinking as like a fan or a spectator. They're thinking as competition. So
right.
I understand their point for it, but I mean, I figure like, why not, you know?
Who cares? Right. Right. Yeah. I'm for it.
Yeah. Something I don't know if you're going to be for. NASCAR confiscated the hood louvers from all of the Hendrick cars to be inspected by the R&D center. So far, no penalty has been announced. Wondering if it'll come out. I thought it would come out today, maybe tomorrow, if there was going to be anything. Listening to some speculation on Denny Hamlin's podcast and some other media outlets, he thinks that maybe they modify them to fit more properly. And I was actually listening to Dave Moody on Sirius XM as I was on the way home, and he had Trevor Bayne on, and Trevor Bayne mentioned the penalty that happened to Michael McDowell last year. Do you remember when Front Row got whacked with a modifying parts penalty? That was because the parts weren't fitting correctly when they were assembling things, so they kind of just shaved some things off to make them fit more properly, and they're wondering if it's one of those type of deals.
So the hood louver is the vent in the hood.
Yeah. So that goes into like the air box and everything.
Yeah. For the Camaro, for the Chevy Camaro, it's, you know, they have the two vents on each side of the hood. And so those snap in. I didn't know that. I thought it was like the form of the hood itself.
Part of the hood.
I guess it would make sense that they kind of snap in.
Yeah, I'm not sure if when you lift the hood up, the louvers are still on the engine there, like right near the top, and they just kind of close the hood on
around
top of
it.
I feel like that's kind of how it works. I haven't seen X Gen with the hood up to that I could picture, but I know once you open it up, they have like these cowls that basically it's like forced induction into the head and everything. So I think that's what it is. But yeah, I guess they just kind of snap into place or they fit into place there. But yeah, NASCAR saw something they didn't like before practice. They let Hendrick practice with them. They also saw the same thing on the colleague cars, and the colleague cars had both of their hood louvers confiscated too. So waiting for an update on that one. Not sure what's going to happen there. Apparently it didn't really affect the performance at all, because Slick Willie B and Kyle Larson went out there and dominated the race once again, Larson more so. But let's see, back to road course talk, because Jimmy Johnson is going to run COTA also. I wish Eric was here, because my whole deal was, what are your thoughts on Legacy Motorsports so far? There was a lot of hype going into the season with Jimmy Johnson becoming a partial owner, and so far haven't really seen much. What are you thinking about Legacy Motorsports?
Yeah, it certainly hasn't been the start that they were probably hoping for, right? Like, they're having a sneaky, really bad start to the year so far, whether it's bad luck, whether it's bad pit stops or anything like that, like whatever it is, you know, you look at the hot start that EJ had last year as a single car team. Now they added Gregson, the rookie, this year. And both of them are kind of struggling. Now, I get it. Some of the stuff was out of their control. EJ wrecked out with Reddick and Chase in Daytona. So not his fault there. But he had a bad West Coast swing too, as far as EJ is concerned. So his average running, or his average finish, is 24th. His average running position is 19th so far this season. And then for Gregson, his average finish is 26th. His average running position is 25th. Just certainly not where you want to be coming out of the West Coast swing, but plenty of time to turn it around. Like, I don't think it's time to hit the panic button for those guys. No. You know, Gregson maybe more or less has a little bit of an excuse being a rookie. He had experience in the cup cars last year too. So I don't know. I expected more out of both of them, but again, it's early in the season. I always say, don't hit the panic button until the Coke 600. Once we get to the Coke 600 and then we start the summertime races, That's when if you're not seeing the results you were hoping to see from a team, that's when I think you need to start panicking a little bit. But until then, you know, teams are still trying to figure it out, and they will. I feel like they will.
My whole thing is, I'm hoping it's just a West Coast swing type of problem, kind of like what we just talked about, where it's like you can't really get a good gauge on the West Coast swing, because then you can come back to Charlotte and start rattling off like great finishes and stuff, you know, because like those cars are prepared weeks in advance to make all that travel time and everything. So I'm hoping to see something more out of Legacy. I've been disappointed too. I was really excited to see EJ on a different pit strategy on Sunday, and I was hoping that would work out for him. I was really hoping a caution would come out and everyone pitted and it gave him good position. But I think it's just one of those things. Well, like you said, don't start panicking until the Coke 600. And then my final piece of news, NASCAR is looking into the comments made by Denny Hamlin on his podcast about intentionally wrecking Ross Chastain. So we got into the woods a little bit personally in between me, you, and Eric on our Twitter DMs. But what do you think about Denny Hamlin basically admitting to trying to take out Ross Chastain at the end of the race on Phoenix, and now NASCAR kind of looking at that and maybe exploring their options with penalties and what?
So I'm going to jump a little bit out of order. This is actually my wreckers. So I'm just going to throw my wreckers out there now, go a little out of order. But my wreckers was not the fact that Denny necessarily took out Ross, because at the end of the day, it's excitement and drama, and like that's the kind of excitement and drama that I'm here for. You know, that just creates a storyline and a rivalry. I've always said that NASCAR needs more rivalries like they had in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And this is definitely one going, you know, this is now the second season that these two are battling. So I'm not wrecking Denny because he did it. I'm wrecking Denny because he admitted to it. And like the number one cardinal rule, you always hear, if you listen to Dale Jr.'s podcast, you always hear him say, like, you never admit it. Don't ever admit it, because the second you admit it, NASCAR is going to drop the hammer on you. Whitey, you made a really, really good so Whitey and I are kind of on the same page with this, just for the listeners. And Eric, who was not here to defend himself, I wish he was. It would have been a great little back and forth segment. But Eric was under the thought process of, who cares? Like, let him go. Like, don't police it. Like, who cares if he admitted it? Let him go.
Eric hates when NASCAR gets into the weeds about judgment calls and intent and stuff, which I'm in the same agreement of that too, you know?
Same. But like, the whole thing is like, there's precedent. When you admit to something, you're going to you're going to pay the price by NASCAR. And then again, Whitey, you made a great analogy in our text message group. That's like when you get pulled over for speeding or whatever, you might get out of it. But the second you cop to the, you know, you admit to the cop, yeah, okay, I was speeding, it's over right there.
He's not cutting you a break, you know?
But he's not going to cut you a break because you admitted to it. But if you just kept your mouth shut, maybe there's that chance that you're going to get away with it. But Whitey, I was going to say Whitey, Denny opened his mouth on his podcast, openly admitted to it, wasn't asked about it. It wasn't in an interview. Like, he didn't get overheard saying it. Like, he brought it up, he talked about it, and offered,
he was really proud of it too, you know?
the way he said it was like, if you haven't seen it, we'll try to remember to retweet it. Go to our Twitter page, Bump and Run Pod on Twitter, and you can see, you know, Denny admitting it on his podcast. He was like proud of it, and I would expect NASCAR to go ahead and levy some sort of penalty against him. They did with Bubba Wallace last year. They have with other drivers in the past. I think they did it to Junior years and years ago. He admitted to something, yeah, and he got hit with penalties. There's a handful of precedents that's been set with this, when admitting to purposely taking someone out.
I know a couple years ago, this is when Bubba was in the 43 car. He intentionally spun himself, and then he admitted to it in an interview like three days later. And then NASCAR dropped the hammer on him. Yeah. And then let's see, whatchamacallit. I know Dale Jr. got in trouble for something like that too. And then I feel like there's a handful of things like
there is.
Yeah. Like even like back, going back to the 80s. So that's what it was. Kenny Wallace went on Twitter and made a video that ruffled some feathers, I think, with some NASCAR media members.
Yeah.
Pistol Pete Pistone. But he said, like, you know, if they penalized every time, like Dale Earnhardt would, he would have been penalized. But if you go back to 1986 at Richmond at the fairgrounds, he turned DW. Now, he egregiously turned DW. He right hooked him into the wall and stuff. But he didn't admit to wrecking him on purpose. He goes, "Oh, I didn't mean to do that." And then he smiled after the interview, and NASCAR threw the hammer at him for just smiling. Yeah. Indicating like, yeah, I did it on purpose. Fuck you guys. You know? So like, it's not like there isn't a precedence for this type of thing. You know, you just got to know when to keep your fucking mouth shut.
Right. Correct. Correct. That's what it comes down to. And like, I think the other thing too, that puts a sour taste in people's mouths is like, Denny seems to be the one that gets away with this shit. Like that he shit that does. He pulled with Bowman after Bowman won last year. Was that last year?
It was last year at Martinsville. Bowman accidentally moved Denny out of the way, and Denny didn't like it. So it's like, I don't know.
So during Bowman's burnout after the race, you know, Denny came in and parked right in front of him and kind of, you know, spun his tires, you know, at Bowman or whatever. But and he didn't get it right. He didn't get any penalty for that, right?
No. And I think if you go back to after that week in this episode, like this week's episode, like, I'm pretty sure I was arguing then that I thought he should have gotten penalized, and he never
did. You were.
You know? You were. Which, like, I mean, you don't have to penalize after every little ticky-tack thing, but I feel like Denny Hamlin gets away with tons of shit like that. Like,
he got away. I mean, Eric mentioned it in our conversation earlier off air. Like, Denny, like, pretty much bullied Ross that last year at Nashville.
It was Gateway after Ross ran into the back of him. Then he held him up on the backstretch and stuff.
Yeah, he toyed with him the rest of the race, and he didn't get anything for that. So, like, Denny seems to get away with these things. So I don't know if it's because he's essentially the face of NASCAR. You know, he's the elder statesman. He's the one that everyone knows. He's got the podcast. You know, he's with Jordan. He does all that. Like, everyone knows the name Denny Hamlin. It's a household name. So maybe that's why. But I don't know. I'm not one to call for penalties. But, like, I feel like something needs to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree too. Even like
he let go of his wheel. Like, he let go of his wheel and ran Ross into the wall. He said, if I'm gonna drop back because everyone has new tires and I don't, then I'm taking him with me.
Which, like, I mean,
what are you doing?
Exactly. You just admitted to murder, Denny. You know, right. Like, statute of limitations wasn't up yet. Ten years from now, you go, oh yeah, that was on purpose. 2 days after the race, like, maybe let's think about things. But speaking of the race, you want to jump right into the Phoenix weekend? We had an Xfinity race. Sammy Smith led twice for 92 laps, absolutely dominated. He's what, 18 years old, something like that.
He's so young. I think he's in. Is he still in high school?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Or he just got out. I mean, if he's 18, he's either still in high school or he just got out. But either way, like, he was impressive on Saturday.
He was
super impressive.
And then, of course, like we said, William Byron, he led twice for 64 laps. He had a really great car. Not as quite as dominant as his teammate Kyle Larson. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But 3 hours, 18 seconds was your race length. 5 cautions for 35 laps, 10 lead changes among 6 different drivers. Your top 5, William Byron, Ryan Blaney, Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson, and Kevin Harvick. A good mix of Ford, Toyota, and Chevy. I was happy to see Blaney in the mix, but let's jump into the race grades.
It's our NASCAR weekend race grade.
All right, and since Eric isn't here, he texted us his race grade, so I'll just read that right off the top here. He gave it a C, and I gave it a C+. Matt, what'd you give it?
I gave it a C+. I gave it a C+, which may as well be an A for Phoenix.
Yeah.
But I went back and looked. Both races last year I gave were C- at Phoenix, including our championship race. So a minor uptick this year to a C+. You know, I said it to you guys, and I'll say it again for the listeners. You know, I think a C+ is about the ceiling for Phoenix. I don't ever foresee that track getting a B or A bracket grade, like, ever.
Yeah.
So I think we probably saw just about the best race we could there. You know, it wasn't an awful race. It wasn't great, but it was okay for Phoenix.
Yeah.
I hope that the short track package had something to do with that. And I hope that when we get into tighter quarters at Martinsville, at Bristol, you know, fan favorites, including mine, that the racing is better there than it was last year. You know, we had a couple decent battles, but again, clean air was king. Once you got out front, you pretty much stayed out there. You know, you had some late race cautions that tried shaking stuff up. The last restart was awesome. It was an A+ restart, but that didn't do enough to really change my grade. You know, it was a C+ race all the way through. And, yeah, like I said, that's about as good of a Phoenix race as you'll see, which still isn't great in my book, but it is what it is. It's Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you, Matt. I gave it like a C+ race with an A+ finish, like an A+ ending. And I think the only downfall really was the lack of battles for the lead, because I was engaged the whole time. A lot of times, like when the race is boring, I'll check out and you start scrolling on your phone. I was still paying attention to all the laps. I was watching it. And I think because I was so intrigued by the new package, I wanted to see how it was running and everything, but we really still didn't see a whole lot of action. So yeah. Like it's tough where it kept my attention, and that's why I gave it the C+ instead of just like a C or a C-, because it did keep my attention. And I thought it was a good race, but it could have been way, way better. And like you said, I think that's just a product of Phoenix. I don't know if we'll ever get an A race out of Phoenix, which makes it disheartening that it's our championship race too, you know?
What would have to happen in order for Phoenix to get like an A race?
I guess just like
any other any other race where, you know, you had good battles, you had lead,
just green battle, lap, battles green for the flag,
lead lap changes, things like that, but we don't seem to have that at Phoenix. You know, maybe if I went back and looked at the numbers, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it's been years since I've enjoyed a Phoenix race. Years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know, because like I gauge a race by like, oh, good battles for the lead. You know, if it's a short track, like, oh, some beating and banging and stuff like that. And like, we get exciting restarts out of Phoenix. The restarts are awesome. And then they string out. So like, yeah. I think it's just the shape of the track. I know Eric hates that fucking dog leg. I don't know if it's the dog. Like, did you notice people using the dog leg though at all? Like
on the restarts,
I didn't even know.
Usually
notice
like
that.
The first, they'll use it like the first 5 to 10 laps on a restart. And then it seems almost pointless to do it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. What do I know? I've never raced there, but listen, the Bump and Run podcast has made our voices well known, our opinions well known on what we feel about Phoenix. We have the championship there for what is this, the third or fourth straight year that we're having the championship race there. Obviously, NASCAR has not announced their schedule for the 2024 season, but I'm like the one major thing over everything else that I want to see on the schedule for 2024 is a different championship location.
Me too. I would love to see it anywhere else, to be honest with you. I would like to see it in Vegas. I think that would be a pretty decent championship race, especially in November. It's another, you know, destination town that seems to be what they're really shooting for. Not the same old place in, like, you know, South Carolina or Virginia, you know what I mean? I don't know, man. Phoenix ain't it. It just ain't it. But you want to what? At the same time, after seeing that finish, I was on the edge. I'm like, man, maybe it should be a B minus. It was pretty good. So, like,
the restart was fun as hell.
Yeah.
Like, it was so exciting that I didn't even know the Chastain and Hamlin thing happened until like 2 hours after the race.
I had no idea. I didn't know about it until they started showing replays and stuff. I was completely clueless to like what was going on with them. Cause all I was looking at was like Kevin Harvick on four new tires, Tyler Reddick on four new tires. Like, that's all I cared about. I'm like, man, can they make something happen while everyone else has two? Which, like, what a bold strategy, especially since, like, right before that on the broadcast, they legitimately brought up, like, the option of two tires. And Larry Mack was like, nope, no way, not going to happen. Clint Boyer was like, yeah, maybe if you want to be fired on Monday as a crew chief. And then sure enough, like, what, eight of the top guys all took two tires and then everyone else took four. I thought that was absolutely insane. And then it actually, I mean, it fucking worked out for him too. You know, I just wish Reddick could have gotten to, past William Byron on that shove. He gave that giant shove, but, that's all I have for my race grade too. You want to jump into the checkers and wreckers? I know you gave your wreckers already, but.
It's this week's checkers and wreckers.
All right, we'll start with Eric first. He gave his wreckers, which was Legacy Motor Club. Once again, fumbling on pit stops, causing the 43 to go down a lap early and have to fight back. I didn't even realize he went down a lap earlier in the race either. So that just makes it more impressive kind of how they finished, where they were trying to do that strategy call and stuff just to be able to put themselves in the position of that strategy. I thought that was pretty good. And then,
but to Eric's point though, like, they wouldn't have had to try to pull off a Hail Mary strategy if they didn't, you know, screw up a pit stop earlier on in the race. It's just, they got to get that figured out. Like I mentioned earlier with the numbers that I threw out with EJ and Gregson, like they've got to get that figured out, 'cause they've got two talented drivers. They've got a program that's coming off of a successful year for them last year. So, you know, EJ had a win and I thought they had a lot of great momentum coming into this year, and it's all crashed to a halt right now. So they've got to figure it out. And it starts with, like, at the track, you can't have those bad pit stops. It just can't happen.
No, I agree. And he says he's starting to worry about this season after that race, and that they have to
get it together.
Yeah, sorry, I caught you off guard on that one. And then his checkers, he wrote that it was Chris Buescher running in the top 10 all day, adding to his good start. I'm going to say that he probably meant Brad Keselowski, because Brad Keselowski ran in the top 10 all day long. Now, you brought up Chris Buescher's stats, though, so I'm going to say collectively, RFK was pretty good on Sunday.
I looked, and Buescher's average running position was 13th. He did have a high position of 5, but I don't know if that was on pit strategy or pit stops or whatnot. So I'm assuming he meant Brad too, because Brad's average running position was 6th. He was top 10 all day. Brad had a hell of a race, comparably from last year. So I'm going to say that old Ron Dane meant Brad Keselowski, but maybe he meant Buescher. But to your point, it doesn't matter. RFK as a whole, is off to a really good start this season. You know, specifically Brad Keselowski. It seems like they've started to figure something out, and I'm not going to be surprised when both of those guys win a race this year.
No, me either. Especially if it's at like a super speedway or something, because we've seen in the last couple of years, Chris Buescher really coming into his own as a super speedway racer. I feel like he's always there at least during the Daytona summer race at the end. Like he's in the top 10. I know he finished, what was it, third one year, and then his car got disqualified. And then I think he finished second, at another super speedway somewhere. So
Chris Buescher, he won a race last year.
He did. What was that? Bristol in the fall.
Yeah, it might've been,
I think so. I don't know.
It was.
All I know is I'm liking what RFK is putting out on track so far. Yeah. Kind of like Legacy, where last year at the end of the season, we saw them kind of building on it. It seems like they're continuing to build on those building blocks. So it's nice to see Brad K performing like we thought he was going to, moving over into RFK. And I hope he gets himself a win. I hate seeing a guy put so much into the sport and then kind of like, you know, like, not floundering, but like the guy's done so much in his career and now he's going in as a team owner. I want to see him succeed as a team owner and driver at the same time.
You know what I just realized too is last year, if I'm not mistaken, I think we didn't get our first repeat winner, which ironically was William Byron. Then I'm looking at last year's races. We didn't get a repeat winner until race 8 last year. Now we already have one at race 4. And again, it's William Byron, the first repeat winner. So are we going to hit that 19 mark? Are we going to even come close to it? You know, I think it's way too early to get into that conversation. Yeah. We're going to have plenty of time throughout the season to debate that over and over and over again. But just something to think about.
It is good to think about, especially leaving the West Coast swing. Like we said, you know, it's its own animal. In terms of figuring out who's good and everything. But right now, Hendrick is hitting on all 8 cylinders.
It kills me that they are.
But you know what? Like you said, Matt, don't worry until the Coke 600. And if you do the math, Chase Elliott might be returning for that Coke 600. You know, so
he'll be back. He'll be back way before then.
Will he? I don't know. I was counting the weeks, and that's around 10
so
or
no,
12
he'll be
weeks
back.
Or so.
He should be back Talladega. So we are going to Dover. So any fans out there that listen to us who don't know us, want to meet us at Talladega if you're going to the race, hit us up in the comments section. Let us know. We'll, you know, be more than happy to have a few beers with you. But anyway, we're going to Dover, and I was actually praying to God that Dover was going to be the return race because we're going to be there.
That would be awesome.
So it might be, you know, it's right around that window of where they say he's probably going to come back. So we'll see.
And like Matt said, we're going to Dover, not Talladega. So meet us in the Dover parking lot, not the Talladega.
Did I say Talladega?
Lot. Yeah. It like right after it kind of mixed in.
Oh yeah. Light. No, we're not going to be, I wish we were going to Talladega.
Oh my God. That'd be amazing. I don't know.
We're going to Dover. We'll be at the Dover race. So if you're going to be around, comment section us and we'll meet up with you. Like I said, shotgun a beer.
All right, Matt, you already gave your wreckers. What about your checkers for the weekend? What did you like? What did you like what you saw?
So I got my number 9 Chase Elliott mug here, but for this week and the next 5 or 6 weeks, it's the Josh Berry mug. So Josh Berry is my checkers. He's my guy. You know, I've talked about that the past couple weeks. So, you know, this admittedly is a homer pick for me, but bringing home a top 10 finish is worthy of a checkers this week for me. You know, I said when Josh got this opportunity, you know, if he can get top 15s during this 5 or 6 race run or whatever it is, you know, that'll speak volumes to the talent that he is. And he ripped off a 10th place finish yesterday. You know, so like, I know like it wasn't all rainbows and puppy dogs for Josh on Sunday. His average running position was 18th, but Allen and that championship caliber number 9 team worked on that car. And much like Chase does a lot, where he might be struggling the first half of the race, he slowly starts making his way up to the front. I mean, he's notorious for it. Slowly starts making his way up to the front. And then finally, you know, in Chase's case, you know, he usually ends up getting in that top 5. Josh got to 10th. And, you know, that's great. So I look forward to seeing what else he can do with this golden opportunity that he's been given. But yeah, I was super excited and happy for him to to get that top 10 finish. And hopefully he just keeps getting better and better as the weeks go on and eventually gets his shot. It's such a cool story. And I can't be a bigger fan of his.
What was his average running position again? 18th.
So he ran anywhere from like 18th to 20th. Every time I looked at to see where he was. And then, like, as I said, like towards the end of that race in the third stage, he started creeping up. So,
hey, I think that's super respectable. And I think he was in like 15th place when that caution came out too. So he was on track for a top 15 anyways. And like you said, like, he's jumping in the car for the second week. You know, he's driven a next gen car last season, I think, right? Didn't he fill in for somebody?
Yeah, he
ran like a Spire car or something.
Year. Yeah.
But at the same time, too, though, like, you're getting thrown in. You know, you're still getting thrown in. Everything's different. You're not used to working with the crew chief. You're not used to the crew. You're not used to anything in the car. I mean, top 10 is something to be very proud of. So I completely I stand by that, Checkers. If you didn't give it to him, I would have. Unfortunately, you did. So I have to eat crow another week in a row.
So do I.
My Checkers goes to Alex Bowman, dude. Yep. Where did this come from? Mr. Consistency. So far, the only driver in the series to get top 10s in every race. And he took the points lead. Thanks to Ross Chastain and Denny's dust up. Just a great start to the season for him and all of Hendricks so far. Chase, for obvious reasons, excluded. But still, now even Josh Berry's doing pretty good in that 9 car. So I expect that. I expect Chase Elliott to come back on fire when after sitting at home for weeks.
I think so, dude. I think so. He was in communication with the team. So, like, he's being active. Like, he's not just sitting at home watching HBO. You know, He's active with the team, so he knows what's going on. I don't know this for sure, but I'm assuming he's probably coming down and getting into the meetings and stuff, you know. So he's got a long road of physical therapy ahead of him, but once he gets back, like, he just has that dog mentality that I think he's going to. I think Chase is going to come back, and I think he's going to rip off wins. I think he's going to be a man on a mission. Yeah. At least I hope so.
And you know what? I think Alex Bowman's win is coming very soon too, because even though he wasn't nearly as dominating as Kyle Larson or William Byron were this past weekend, he was still running. I think I saw him like running around 11th, 12th for most of the day. He definitely had a fast car. And I think it was just the product of the track where you couldn't get around guys. You know, a lot of people were making up time on pit road and stuff. And man, super impressed with Alex Bowman so far this season, especially for our shit take going into it. But from watching last season and watching him struggle, like, I feel like our take was good until this season started, and he basically shut us right up. So,
dude, he's got, I mean, first of all, he's running. He's the most, like you said, to your point, he's the most consistent guy we've got going in the Cup Series right now. It's why he's first in the standings, in the point standings. So usually when you're running that consistent, it's only a matter of time before you grab that win. But look at some of the racetracks that are coming up within the next couple months. You know, you've got Dover, we just mentioned. He's won there. You've got Richmond. He's won there. You've got Martin. He's won there. So he's got a couple tracks coming up that he knows how to win at. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Bowman came and started winning a couple races himself.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll keep eating crow all season if I have to, because I want to see him perform well. You know, you want to see the 48 in victory lane. Yeah. You know, like, it's just synonymous. So good for Alex Bowman.
For anyone who doesn't know, before the season started, our season preview, all three of us were kind of, you know, writing Bowman off to a certain extent, just saying he's inconsistent. You know, this is, you know, well, at that point when we said it was a contract year before he got the extension. So it was, it was a toss up for us, and he's proven us wrong. He has been the poster child of consistency so far in a good way. And we're all Bowman fans. Our friend of the show, Justin Pierce, is a huge Alex Bowman fan. So he was ribbing us a little bit, telling us, you know, that we would regret that. And we are. We're immediately regretting.
Yeah, absolutely. And then my records for the weekend, just the lack of battles for the lead. We saw, yeah, some great restarts at the end there. But before that, we saw one green flag pass for the lead. And it was a hell of a one when Kevin Harvick on that long run kind of came through. And I feel like Harvick kind of saved the race at that point too, where things start getting exciting. But other than that, man, was it boring to watch. Even though I said, like I said, I was glued in because I kept waiting for something to happen. It just never did. And then going through some of the race notes, like real quick, we had Larson and Byron all day long, just dominant. Kevin Harvick's long run, Ross Chastain, Denny Hamlin dust up at the last lap. And then a strong day from Brad Kay, not the finish we thought he would. Got an 18th place finish, but scored stage points in both stages. And we cover that with Eric's checkers. So I feel like that's the race for Phoenix, unless you have anything else to add.
On to Atlanta.
Well, before we move on to Atlanta, of course, everyone loves to talk about the winner on a Monday, one William Byron. But here on the Bumper Run Podcast, we like to talk about the guy who came in last place. And this week it was one BJ McLeod. He left the race early on lap 50. It was listed as a fuel pump issue that took him out. So unfortunate for BJ McLeod. And kind of, I'm going to say unfortunate that he didn't cause a caution, because we could have used it in the middle of that first stage to liven things up a little bit. But I digress. Let's see. I have one pick a lane. Should I save it for next week when Eric could argue with us?
I feel. Let me see here. Yeah.
So it's about rules changes and midweek rules changes. I'll read it out for you guys now as just a little quick teaser. But I think we're gonna power through this episode and we'll save this because I want to get Eric's perspective on this one too.
So do I.
We saw rule change to the downforce package for all wet weather tracks. I'm not sure if we could gauge a difference in one weekend, but it made for an interesting storyline to speculate around. Last week on Dale Jr.'s podcast, he brought up midweek rule changes back in the day, and it made me wonder. I know we don't like competition rule changes. At least I know I don't like competition rule changes in the middle of the week. We saw it in like 2020. Remember they had some uncontrolled tire. Yeah. If it left the box at all, it was considered an uncontrolled tire. And then they changed it like midway through. I hate when they do stuff like that midway through a season, because then I feel like everyone that's been penalized before that kind of gets fucked over, you know?
I'm going to reserve my opinion on all of this, and I've got a strong one for next week.
Okay. But what about a mid-season rules package change just to keep the crew chiefs and the crews on their toes? We'll let the listener marinate on that all week long, too, and we'll come back to that next week when Eric returns. But now, like Matt said, we're heading to Atlanta.
Marty, you gotta come back with me.
Where?
The next NASCAR Cup race. It's the weekend preview.
And it's our third race on the reconfigured Atlanta Super Speedway hybrid mile and a half track. Going to be interesting to see how the track aged since last year. This Saturday, we have a Truck and Xfinity doubleheader. Trucks on track, 2 p.m. on FS1 for the Freight 208. And the Xfinity will follow at 5 p.m. on FS1 for the Raptor 250. Saturday, we have qualifying for Cup only, 11:35, but no practice for Cup, which I'm not too thrilled about, to be honest with you.
I'm not thrilled about that at all.
No, gonna be tough to make our picks for.
I'm gonna be laid up this weekend. I got a little thing going on with my knee, a little operation that I'm going in. So I'm gonna be couch ridden all weekend. And so I was looking forward to as much NASCAR action as possible. And so the fact that we're not getting any practice, that stinks.
You want to? It does. And I wish you luck on your knee surgery. I hope it goes very well. No, I agree, man. Like, I like watching practice. And even if I'm not paying attention, I just like having practice on the TV in the background. There's just something about it.
Yeah. Even if it's like a weekend where I can't watch a single second of practice, it's just good. Like you said, we're gamblers. We're in a fantasy league for NASCAR. It's just so helpful to get that. Like, I can dial in a lineup so much better when we have actual stats to go off. And then you couple the fact that now Atlanta is a super speedway race where it's kind of the unknown going into it. You know, there's so many variables that can affect the outcome of the race. It makes it so impossible to gamble, to set a lineup. But with that being said, we will do our best to give you our picks and our opinions on who we think is going to run well.
And it is for the race on Sunday, 3 p.m. on Fox, the Ambetter Health 400. I didn't mention that one, but I agree, man. And especially as of late for fantasy. So going into Daytona, it's a crapshoot every time, right? And then so I finished last in fantasy. The last couple of weeks, I've put together this massive spreadsheet. I got practice times. I got qualifying positions. I got all sorts of formulas running. I got the Whitey speed score. Tell me who to pick in fantasy. And the last 2 weeks, it's been doing pretty well. And now we're heading into Atlanta, complete unknown. I need to get my fix. I need to get my Whitey speed score so I know who to bet on it and who to place. But Matt, does DraftKings have the odds going into Atlanta?
Yep. So I think this is only the second time this year that we've DraftKings have had the odds at the moment that we're recording. So one silver lining to us recording a day late is that we actually get the odds. So I'm just going to give you the top three favorites for Atlanta. It's a super speedway race, so these odds are all high. So really, if you bet on someone this weekend and you hit that winner, you're going to win a lot of good money. That's the one cool thing about – well, one of plenty cool things about super speedway racing. So your top three favorites at Atlanta from three down to one is Kyle Busch coming in at plus 1,000. Just excellent odds. Yeah. You put $10 on Kyle Busch to win, you're winning $110. That's just fantastic. And again, these lines are provided by DraftKings. Kyle Larson, second favorite to win. I'm sorry. He is tied with teammate William Byron, both at plus 900 to win. So Larson, that's always weird. I don't understand why DraftKings does that, that Larson's almost always the favorite. Slick Willie Two Clocks, he's coming off of two wins. I understand why he's going to be the favorite. But Larson, like a super speedway racer, like
– he's bad at super speedway racing. Yeah, man. He's not good at it. Although, like Willie B,
he's running well, though.
He's on a hot streak, too, right now, too. So. Yeah. And I feel like, you know what? Sometimes I wonder if they just put his name at the top to entice betting and get people to bet on him just because he's a recognizably hot name right now. Just because, honestly, just because of his championship season where he rattled off, 11, 12 wins?
10 wins, whatever it was, yeah.
So I sometimes wonder if Vegas is kind of playing that type of deal, kind of like how Kyle Busch is the odds on favorite. Yeah, he ran really great at Daytona
too, though. They're begging you to take him. You know, that's like when a team is +1.5 and it's like they're just begging you, like, just here, take it, just like they want you to bite on it. But yeah, spoiler alert, I'm coming in last, I believe, to give our picks. I'm not picking Larson.
Okay. All right. How about who's in third there?
So I guess Larson and Slick Willie Two Clocks are the two favorites at plus 900. So I already X'd out of it. Give me a second. I can load that back up.
I don't know who I'm going to pick. So I need some reminders of.
Okay. So you need me to filibuster a little bit. Yeah. I got you, lady. So I'll just go over the top five favorites. Actually, it's like there was like five or six guys that were all plus 1,200. And then – so here we go. So it was Slick Willie Two Clocks and Larson are your favorite, tied at plus 900. You've got Kyle Busch at plus 1,000. And then you've got Blaney, Chastain, Logano, and Hamlin all tied at plus 1,200.
Okay. And now I have my pick. I figured out who I'm going to go with.
All right.
All right, so to review our picks from last week in Phoenix, I picked Christopher Belt to win. He got me 43 points. Matt, you picked Tyler Reddick to win. He got you 46 points. And then Eric picked Ross Chastain. Unfortunately, he only got 19 points. So Eric picks first. We have his pick in the text message, and he is picking one Brad Keselowski from RFK to get it done in Atlanta.
No, dude. He picked BJ McLeod.
Oh, see, I saw the B and I.
Yeah, no, BJ McLeod for Eric.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll put BJ McLeod down for Eric.
No, Eric picked Brad, and it's a solid pick, by the way.
I am going to go with Brad's former teammate. He's won at Super Speedways before. Sometimes he drives a yellow car. It's not Joey Logano, but one Ryan Blaney.
Yeah.
I think Blaney might get his win at Atlanta this week. He had a good finish in Phoenix, and I hope he's keeping the momentum rolling. And how about you, Matt? Who are you going with? Not Kyle Larson.
So not Kyle Larson, no. So, and we only, by the way, I don't know if you mentioned this, we only can pick a guy three times
this season.
Throughout the season, including the playoffs. So I was thinking about this, and we mentioned this guy earlier. He's pretty freaking decent at super speedway races. I know it's a gamble, especially because I'm actually ahead in the points for once. Like last year, I was in the basement all last year.
Yeah.
So I'd hate to take a gamble this early with a good little lead, but I am going to. I am taking the 17 of Chris Buescher.
Okay. I think it's a good pick. The Bump and Run podcast is heavy on Ford and heavy on RFK, and I
heavy kinda, on the B's too. Brad, Blaney, and Buescher.
Brad, the three B's of the Bump and Run podcast. I like it. I think it's a good pick. We mentioned it during the Checkers and Wreckers. Like, he's really coming into his own as a super speedway racer. They've been showing speed early on in the season, building on the momentum from last season. I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's going to be really interesting. We're four races into the 2023 season. We have three different winners, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kyle Busch, and William Byron. Can Brad Keselowski add his name to the list? Can Ryan Blaney do it? Or will it be Brad Keselowski's RFK employee and teammate, Chris Buescher? We will find out this Sunday, 3 p.m. on Fox for the Ambetter Health 400. It's kind of wild getting done this early. For Matt the Statman Riley, for Eric Daytona Ron, I'm Michael D. White saying have a good night.
The Bump and Run.
There it is.